Meanwhile,
who knows?
KMZ Turner.
What evil?
88.5 FM.
Let's hit the hearts of men.
And 100.7 FM in Marion and Polk County.
The Shadow Lord.
Salem and Kaiser.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit.
Taking over the entire planet.
Crime does not pay.
At KMUZ.org.
The Shadow Lord.
Mid-Valley Mutations.
Welcome to the holiday season with the Shadow Christmas Special. Who knows what stories lurk in the hearts of KMUZ? Mid-Valley Mutations knows.
Now, here's the host of Mid-Valley Mutations, Austin Ridge.
And welcome to another exciting edition of Mid-Valley Mutations, podcast style. That's right, we are not in the KMUZ studios this week, unfortunately. Or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, because we've got sub-zero weather, and the streets are frozen. We got snow that fell from the sky. We're getting weather warnings every other hour about what's happening. It's complete chaos here in the Salem-Kaiser area. And so, rather than risk going out on the roads in 18-degree weather, I thought, instead, I'll just deliver a podcast version of the program. Doesn't mean that we're doing anything less than we would normally, and in fact, we have precisely what we have promised: two episodes of The Shadow, the classic radio drama, and these are holiday-themed, so I thought that'd be a lot of fun for listeners who are enjoying the winter weather and are looking for something that's still a little bit seasonal, but want to enjoy a little radio. So that's what we got planned for you tonight. Now, I know that Orson Welles made the character popular, and at one point I claimed I was going to be playing some Orson Welles broadcasts, but that is not the case. In fact, we're going with another very well-known actor, William Johnstone, who played the Shadow character for 5 years and played alongside none other than Agnes Moorehead, who is portraying Margot Lane on the show you're about to hear in a few moments. So that's just a taste of what you have coming in store for you on the program. So sit back, enjoy a cup of something spiked, and settle in for The Stockings Were Hung, a Christmas Eve broadcast from 1939. Featuring The Shadow. Enjoy.
Mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. The Shadow uses his hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so that they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the unseen voice of the Shadow belongs. Today's story, The Stockings Were Hung. This is a story of Christmas time in a great city. Tonight, with Margot Lane and Lamont Cranston, we look in on the lives of the Grover family.
Get out of here. Get out. You'll not get a cent of pay from me, Mr. Grover.
Simon Jordan, you know my wife's dead, and I have two children.
And it's Christmas. I've got
to. Get out before I...
It's Christmas time in a great city. As our scene opens, we find Margot and Lamont coming down on the elevator from Margot's apartment.
Well, here's where we get out, Margot. Where now?
Over to the club, Lamont, to pick up a Christmas basket of food to deliver.
Good.
Oh, look, Lamont, it's snowing.
What do you think of that?
I want to stop the corner and see my friend Spike.
Spike?
Yes, Spike Grover. He's a newsboy. I always buy my papers for. There's Spike on the corner.
Busy little man, isn't he?
I always give him $5 for Christmas.
In spite of all you've said about organized charity, giving one isolated newsboy $5.
Oh, but Lamont, this is different.
Get your papers.
I should say it is different. It isn't even Spike.
Paper, mister, paper.
Yes, the young lady would like a paper to cover her new hat. If you can call that Christmas tree ornament a hat.
Where's Spike Grover?
Spike's got family trouble. He's a pal of mine, Spike. He tells me everything. He knows I can keep a secret.
Family trouble?
Well, it's very confidential. You see, Spike and his sister Jane, you see, they haven't got any mother. They only got a father. And you see, I don't tell anybody, but Spike's grandfather owned the Grover Importing Company.
Wait a minute. You're way ahead of me.
Now, look. Spike's grandfather owned the Grover Importing business, and Spike's name is Grover. So Spike and his father should own the Grover Importing business. And, well, it seems there's a fellow named Jordan worked for Spike's grandfather. And the way I figure it, this fellow Jordan put the snatch on the whole business.
Did what?
Lady, you wouldn't understand. I was just telling this gentleman here, as far as I can figure, this old miser named Jordan steals the whole business right out from under Spike's father's nose. So a couple of days ago, Jordan fired Spike's father from his own business, mind you. Ain't that awful?
But where is Spike?
And where's his father?
Lady, if I knew that, I'd tell Spike.
Well, where does he live?
He lives in the old house down on South and 7th Street.
What's your name, son?
They call me Gabby. But you know, I could never figure out why.
No? Well, Gabby, here's a Christmas present for you.
Oh, thanks. Gee, thanks, mister.
Merry Christmas, Gabby.
And the same to you, lady.
Bye. Well, you go over to your club and pick up the Christmas basket, Margot. I think I'll go down and see Spike and family. I'll pick you up at the club, Margot. A cab.
You want a cab, mister? You want a cab?
Yes. Take me to South and 7th Street, please.
South and 7th Street, yes. South and 7th.
Thanks. Oh, by the way, I want to stop at a pet shop on the way. Do you know a good one nearby?
Well, I don't know where that is. There's one. I do know where there's one on the next block, that is.
Well, that's where we're going, then. Oh, driver, are you busy tonight?
Yeah, I got to drive this cab. Ain't it awful, ain't it?
That's what I mean. That's what I... Now you've got me doing it.
Doing what?
Hiring the cab for tonight.
You mean it?
Sure.
Gee, Santa Claus. I didn't know you without them whiskers. That's a joke. Hey, there's a pet shop, mister. There it is.
Well, that's fine. Thanks. What's your name?
Louis.
Well, come on, Louis. Let's buy a pup.
Buy a pup, huh? Buy a pup, oh boy. Hey, the red one in the window?
Sold, Louis, sold.
Oh, that's a cute pup. That's a cute pup, all right.
How much is the red setup up in the window?
Oh, that's a very fine animal. $35.
Fine. Wrap it up.
I beg your pardon?
Put it in a cardboard carton with some holes in it. We'll take it with us.
Very good, sir.
Well, now, Louis, you'll take the pup in front, see? It's a surprise for a young lady we'll pick up later. She mustn't know about it.
Yeah, sure. Say, but suppose it begins to bark or whine or something?
Well, if she asks what it is, you just tell her a box of books.
Hey, yeah, that's smart. But wait a minute. What kind of books am I going to say if it starts to bark?
Oh, that's easy. You just call for sneeze.
Believe me, mister, if you didn't want this hack for the evening, I tell you, it sounds a little screwy to me, I tell you.
Here's your dog, sir. Fine animal indeed.
Louis, sneeze.
Huh?
Sneeze.
Oh.
Isn't that?
Thanks.
Great, Louis, great. Take the box of books now. We're off to South and 7th Street.
Mother would be very mad if I didn't make these cookies just perfect for Daddy. Let me see. Here it is. Mother's recipe for Christmas cookies. 1 1/4 cups of flour. I've got that. 1 1/2 teaspoons of vanilla. Maybe nobody would notice if there's no vanilla in them. 1/3 cup of sugar. 1 egg. And 1/2 cup of butter. 1/2 cup of butter? I haven't even got half of a half a cup of butter. Oh, I wanted so much to surprise Daddy.
Well, that's no way to feel on Christmas Eve. What's the matter, Jamie?
Well, I haven't got hardly anybody.
Well, we'll take care of that in a minute, Jamie. But I came here looking for your brother Kingsley.
But I don't know where my brother is because he's looking for my father. And I don't know where my father is. Daddy hasn't been home for 2 whole days.
Oh, easy, Jamie.
Well, Kingsley says Daddy will be home for Christmas.
I'm sure he will.
But now Kingsley's gone. I haven't any brother, and Mother always makes it with Christmas cookies.
Well, now, look, Janie. I think this will give you all the butter you want and anything else you might need for your Christmas cookies.
Oh, it's $5.
You can't expect me to find your father and Kingsley if you don't have Christmas cookies ready for them when they come home.
Will you really bring them home?
I'll try, Janie. I'll try.
Hey, is this where we picked the young lady up?
Yes, Louie. And don't forget, that's a box of books you have in front and not a dog. And don't forget, if he barks, you sneeze.
Okay, okay.
Well, there's Miss Lane now. Oh, Margot, been waiting long?
Oh, no, Lamont. Whew, I just piled the snow on my best hat so I look like the spirit of Christmas.
Oh, sunshine.
Did you deliver your last basket?
Yes. What's that package you have in front, driver?
Oh, I got it. A box of books. I got a box of books.
Oh. Well, I thought you'd never get here.
The South and 7th Streets, Louie. That's Spike's house, Margo. You wait here, Louie.
Yeah, sure, boss. Sure.
There, Margo. This is Spike's house.
Let's
go in and see Jamie, huh?
Good. I want to meet her. Look, there's two boys of fire. And that small boy is Spike.
It is. Hey, you youngsters.
Look on that tree. It's mine.
Stop picking on you, big bully.
Oh, scram.
See, Miss Lane, I found this tree.
You did not.
Come on, you young hoodlums. Hey, now, wait a minute. One at a time.
I saw it in the gutter.
Listen, young man. I suggest that you run along and let Spike have his tree.
Who's going to make me?
Why, you young rat scoundrel.
Oh, Lamont, remember, peace on earth.
I'll get you, Spike, when you haven't got your gang with you.
What a piece of the society column. The well-known clubman, Lamont Cranston, seen brawling. Ow! Why, that hit me with a snowball.
Remember, Margo, peace on earth.
Well, if you were half a man, you'd do something about it.
Never let it be said.
Well, here, you're not going to throw a snowball at him.
It wouldn't look well if I shot him, would it?
Why, what a way
out! Hey, who do you think you are, Lefty Gomez or something? I'll get you, Spike.
Ernest, it isn't even a good Christmas tree.
Oh, Spike, it's a beautiful tree.
It hasn't got many needles. You got to have a Christmas tree when you got a girl in the house.
You're right, Kingsley.
Kingsley, have you been talking to my sister?
Yes.
Nothing's happened to my dad yet, has it?
Why, of course not. We know your dad's missing, so we just came down to help.
Have you any idea where your father is, Spike?
Oh, gee. He'll show up.
Have you been to the place where he works?
Where he used to work. That old stint from Mr. Jordan won't let him work there anymore.
I see. Have you asked the police for help?
Well, that's just the trouble, Mr. Cranston. I can't.
Why not, Spike?
Oh, it's kind of private.
Well, here, you must tell us or we won't be able to help you.
Oh, well, all right. I went there yesterday and Mr. Jordan said he hadn't seen Dad. And when he did, he was going to have him thrown in jail.
What?
Yeah. Mr. Jordan said my dad did something to the books or something. And that he was a thief. My dad wouldn't do anything like that.
I'm sure he wouldn't, Spike.
Bet he wouldn't. Especially because that business really belongs to him. And it's supposed to belong to me someday when I get big. If anybody's a thief, it's that old skinflint Mr. Jordan.
Now look, Spike. The first thing we've got to do is to find your father.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to get the police to help us.
Oh, but maybe they'll arrest him.
But you and I both know that your dad didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah, that's right. Maybe they can find him, huh? Maybe they can find him.
Sure they can. You tell me what he looks like. Then you and Miss Lane go in the house, and I'll go to police headquarters. Good evening, Sergeant Murphy.
Well, well. Season's greetings to you, Mr. Cranston.
Same to you. Sergeant, Kingsley Grover Sr. has been missing for 2 days.
Tell me what he looks like and we'll start looking.
His son Spike told me that he was 5'10", weighed about 165, was wearing brown overalls.
cars, calling all cars, missing since last Friday, Kingsley Grover Sr., right 5 feet.
Harbor Patrol.
This is headquarters. We're looking for Kingsley Grover Sr., right 5 feet dead. Wait. Cheerful. Headquarters calling. Merry Christmas. Have you got a stiff on ice about 5 feet in? Wait.
Hello, Ray.
Hello, Mr. Cranston. Did you find out anything about Spike's old man at police headquarters?
No, not yet. Miss Lane's still in the house?
Yeah. She's there with Spike and his sister. Say, the dog's all right. I didn't have to sneeze or nothing. He was so quiet, I thought he was froze or something. So put my hand inside the box. You know what happened?
No.
He bit my finger. He's a card, all right. He's a card.
Keep up the good work, Louie. I'm going in the house.
Okay, boss. Okay.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, Mom. Come on down here.
Yeah. He's down there. You were gone a long time, Mr. Cranston. The police find him?
They'll get him soon, Spike. Don't be impatient now.
No, I won't be impatient. Say, would it be bad if you and Miss Lane went into the other room for a minute? I want to talk to my sister. Do you mind?
No, of course not, Spike. Come on with me, Lamont.
It'll only be a second.
Take your time, Spike.
Look at Jamie. We'll find him in time for Christmas.
And still the search for Spike's father goes on. The machine of the police looking everywhere. Hours pass, and no word. Now we find Kingsley going up to old Mr. Jordan's office.
Mr. Jordan!
Who is it? It's you, is it? Get out of here.
Please tell me where my father is.
I don't know where that thieving father of yours is. If I did...
He's not a thief. If anybody's a thief, you are.
You shut your lying, dirty mouth.
You stole my father's business. He should be here, not you.
I'll flash you within an inch of your life, you little gutter snipe.
Please don't hit me with that chain again, please.
You don't like that,
please.
Eh? And that.
Oh, please stop it.
Come on, get out. Get out.
Mike, what's the matter?
Kendall, you're hurt.
You poor kid. How did you get that red welt across your cheek?
Mr. Jordan hit me with his cane.
Oh, you poor child. Come here, I'll wash it out.
Now we have to plan what we're going to do. Have you any suggestions, Spike?
Only one, Mr. Cranston.
What's that?
Well, it sounds kind of silly, maybe, even to try it, but you see, Dad and I, well, we always used to walk up the avenue on Christmas Eve.
Oh, it sings a little, doesn't it?
It's all right. Well, anyway, we'd look in the store windows and we'd see what we'd buy for ourselves and Jamie and Mother when she was alive. If we had all the money we wanted, I thought I'd walk up the avenue tonight. And... well, I guess it sounds kind of silly, but I would like to.
That's a wonderful idea, Kingsley. And Margot.
Yes, Lamont.
Why don't you go along and take a pencil and paper and write down all the things Spike would like for himself and his sister?
We never did that.
No? Yeah. Well, just think what fun you'd have. Take talking it over with Jamie afterwards if you had a list.
Gee, that's hard. Let's go. Wait, you know, we might even run into Dad.
Well, sure you might.
Aren't you coming with us, Mr. Cranston?
Well, yes, of course. I'll join you on the avenue, but first I want to get to police station again and check up.
Oh, Jamie.
Yes, Kingsley?
You better stay here and watch those cookies don't burn again.
All right.
I'll be with you in a little while.
Close the books for the night. I've had a good year. Who's there? No one. And I guess I'll give myself a Christmas present of a new latch for the door. That Grover brat must have left it open. He's too smart, that boy. You don't have to worry about any Grovers ever again, Simon Jordan. Simon Jordan. That's going to look fine in new gilt letters on the door. Instead of Grover's important company. You're pretty slick, Simon Jordan. These books are fixed so cleverly that even the Supreme Court couldn't tell that Simon Jordan didn't own this company. Hey, what was that? Who said that?
No one said anything, Simon Jordan. I was just enjoying your joke with you.
Now, where are you? I can hear your voice.
Of course you can hear my voice, Simon Jordan. But you can't see me. I'm in the shadows. The shadows of your mind.
Go away. Go away from me.
I thought you might be lonely.
No, I'm not going. Go away.
I came to ask you about the Grovers.
Hey? What do you know about the Grovers?
Enough, Simon Jordan. Enough to know that your altered books would not fool the Supreme Court.
Hey? You're not a spirit, are you?
In a sense, yes. I try to represent the spirit of honesty and justice. And when Simon Jordan beats a child with his cane, steals from the father of that child like a low, sneaking thief, then I must talk to Simon Jordan.
I'm not a thief.
No. I should not disgrace thieves by calling you one of them.
Hey?
You're a man too mean to be a thief, Jordan.
Yeah.
What do you want from this world?
None of your business what I want.
I'll tell you. You want money. Nothing but money. I feel sorry for you, Simon.
Oh.
I'm going to go now. But I want to leave one thought with you.
Eh?
You're an old man. You don't have much longer to live.
What?
All your life's work is your money. It's rather an empty victory, isn't it? You're alone in the world. Your money doesn't do anyone any good, Simon Jordan.
Eh?
But you can rest easy in your shriveled soul because the Growers will be taken care of. The Shadow will take care of them.
The Shadow?
There they are, Louis. Stop here. Margot, Spike! Hello!
Hello there, Lamont.
Oh, I thought I'd never pick you up.
We're beginning to worry, too.
How are things down at the police station?
Well, not much news yet, Spike. But they've got a couple of leads that might amount to something.
That's good.
Are you pretty near the end of your Christmas Eve walk, Spike?
We've got one more stop. Pop and me always stopped in here at the cathedral, you know, just to get out of the cold for a minute. You don't have to be afraid. They'll let you in.
If you take it, they will, Spike.
Up these steps.
Come on, I didn't know there were as many windows in town. I'm dead. I've got a list of presents as long as... Oh, where's your arm?
Don't slip, Miss Lane.
I hope you've got a preferred list.
Oh, I have.
Here, in here. Boy, the door's heavy. We can stand back here and listen.
All right, Spike.
Look, Lamont, that poor man over in the corner.
Yes.
Mr. Cranston.
What?
It's my dad. Daddy. Speak to me. Speak to me. You won't speak to me.
Mr. Grover. Mr. Grover, this is your son. Don't you know him?
Yes.
I can't remember, Margot. This man has been hurt.
Let's get him outside, Lamont.
Do you remember your name, sir?
Gee, there's something wrong with him.
My name? You must try to remember. Truck. Skidding. Hit me. Oh. Why did you come to the cathedral tonight?
It's, Christmas Eve. Always come here.
Who is we?
I can't remember.
Miss Lane leaves some packages with you?
Did she leave some packages? Did she leave some? She dumped them in the back of the hack and went to the kids. Spike, was talking all the way down about your father's old man. Is that the kid's old man with you?
Yes, he's in pretty good shape now.
Oh, gee, that's the nice that set me is.
Now, Louie, don't forget to bring in those packages when I call you. All right now, Mr. Grover. Just lean on me. You're still a little bit shaky.
I know it.
Now, watch the stamp.
I'm all right, thank you.
Yeah, you're fine now. All right. You go first.
Merry Christmas, children.
Daddy! Oh!
How is the lady of the house?
Oh, just wonderful now that you're here. Oh, Daddy. And I make Christmas cookies, too.
Fine, fine. And how about you, young man? How have you been behaving?
I've been getting along all right.
Hey, where did you get that nasty welt across your cheek? You haven't been in a fight, have you, son?
Oh, I'll go.
Oh, no, sir. It was only an accident.
Mr. Jordan, what are you doing here?
I came to speak on a matter of business.
I don't believe this is the occasion for a business discussion.
Oh, I think it is, Mr. Grover. In going over the books tonight, I found that a great and terrible mistake has been made.
Huh?
The Grover Importing Company has been making more money than I thought. And over half of it is rightfully yours as partner in the company. partner. Yes, part owner. And I hope you'll find it within your heart to forget any misunderstandings we may have had and that you'll take over the responsibilities of partnership immediately. Yes, yes, that's all I've got to say. Good night, and Merry Christmas to you all.
Oh, how can such an awful old man say such beautiful things?
Well, we haven't time to talk about whether he's awful or not. We have things to do. Louie!
Well, you don't have to yell. You don't have to yell. I'm right here. I'm right here. I got all the stuff right with me.
Good. Bring it right in.
Look, presents! Are they for us?
Quiet, Jamie. Of course they're not.
But they are, Kingsley.
Oh, don't kid me, Mr. Cranston.
You're not getting fined.
Oh, I don't know how I can ever repay you for what you, Miss Lane, and Mr. Cranston have done tonight.
We have been more than repaid, I assure you. Louis, don't bring that in here. I didn't tell you I wanted you to bring that in.
With my own idea. And I'm not even going to have to sneeze.
Oh, I dropped.
Oh, Lamont, you're a darling. Did you get that puppy?
Well, yes.
Gee, is that for us, too?
Why... Oh, of course, Spike. Mr. Cranston got that for you as a surprise.
Margot, hear ye. It's about time for all three of you, and that means you too, Mr. Grover, to sit down and open some packages. We've got to go. You ready, Margot? Where's Louie?
He went outside.
Merry Christmas to you all, and to you all, good night.
Merry Christmas!
Well, Margot, earlier tonight, we disagreed on our interpretation of charity. Silly, wasn't it?
I know what you mean, Lamont.
There should never be a thing called charity. There should never have been the necessity to create the word. In this short span we call our lives, if each man would only realize that every other man has dreams and hopes, this world wouldn't be a topsy-turvy place. Then peace on earth would be a fact. Goodwill would be for every man.
Is that you, Louie?
Oh, me?
Yeah, Mr. Cranston.
Have you got a cold?
A box of books.
Box of books? But you brought that inside.
Yeah, but this is another one.
Another one?
Yeah, another one. It's for you, Miss Lane.
You mean it's another puppy?
Yeah, it's my own idea. You see, when I went by the pet shop, and the other pup's brother was in the window, so I went in and I pet him on the head. You know what he done, Mr. Cranston?
No.
He bit my finger. Oh, he's a god. So I had to go and get him for Miss Lane. And I charged them to you, I did.
Aunt?
Yes, Margot?
I'd like to say something.
Why, certainly. What do you want to say?
Merry Christmas to everybody.
Thank you, Margot and Lamont. Today's program is based on a story copyrighted by the Shadow Magazine. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. The Shadow Magazine is on sale at your local newsstand.
The weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
And that was The Stockings Were Hung. An episode of The Shadow from Christmas Eve, 1939, featuring William Johnstone as The Shadow and Agnes Moorehead as Margot Lane. Stay tuned because we're going to have another story from The Shadow. But first, let's go to the weather computer. What do you got for us, weather computer?
Thank you, Austin. This is the Mid-Valley Mutations Weather Computer, and here is a look at the local weather, brought to you by the Weather Outside. Have you taken a look at it, recently? It is frightful, for sure. You really should just stick around, and sit with me by my fire, hint hint. Man, someone should write a song about this, or something. Tonight, a few passing clouds, low of 17 degrees. That is some seriously cold weather. Please, find a warm place to stay, if you can. Winds south by southeast at 4 miles per hour. Sunrise at 7:44 a.m. That seems really late in the morning, if you ask me. Tomorrow, cloudy skies. High of 36 degrees. That's not at all warm, dude. Winds south at 5 to 10 miles per hour. It's gonna be grim out there, that's for sure. Sunset at 4:31 p.m. And that was a look at the local weather, brought to you by the weather computer, and that it's cold outside. I know that you've told me 100 times that you just can't stay, but maybe it is seriously cold outside. Have you looked? Now, have some more of my special drink, and have another cigarette. The weather computer demands it. Now, back to Mid-Valley Mutations.
Who knows what stories lurk in the hearts of KMUZ?
Mid-Valley Mutations.
Knows. That's right, we are in the middle of our Shadow Christmas special here on Mid-Valley Mutations podcast version, considering we couldn't get to the KMUZ studios today. It was just too dang cold. But never fear, we will continue to bring you entertainment for as long as we are able to do so. And with that in mind, we have up next another classic episode of The Shadow. This time, with the main character voiced by Brett Morrison, who probably played the character for the longest, about 10 years. Side by side with him was Grace Matthews portraying Margot Lane. This story is from 1947. The Shadow was on the air for quite some time, actually beginning in the 30s before the character had even been developed. The Shadow was merely just a host who would come on and introduce crime stories. However, the character became a little bit more popular, and then when Orson Welles portrayed him, it sort of knocked it out of the park. But Orson only did the character for 2 years, and while he is still associated with The Shadow all these years later, many other people have portrayed the character. And so we're hearing a couple of those tonight. This episode from December 21st of 1947 is called The Gift of Murder. And without further ado, let's hear The Shadow.
The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, A Gift of Murder. December. A fine flurry of snow is just beginning to fall from the darkening sky as a smartly dressed young woman knocks on the heavy door of Gerald Covington's country estate.
Miss Eva.
Surprised to see me, Baxter?
Delighted to see you, miss, and I know your brother will be overjoyed. Come in, come in. Mr. Gerald was saying only last week that he hoped you'd get back from Europe in time for the party tonight.
Party? Did you say party?
Yes, miss.
A party here?
A little gathering in keeping with this glad season.
As I remember Gerald, he considers all seasons equally glum.
I know, miss, but this, you see, is in honor of your Aunt Frances.
In honor of Aunt Frances? Do you mean to tell me that Gerald is giving a party for Aunt Frances?
Indeed, miss.
Why, where is he?
In the drawing room, trimming the Christmas tree.
This I've got to see. Gerald!
Gerald.
Eva. What a happy surprise, I can't tell you.
A Christmas tree.
Yes, I did it all myself.
And presents.
For your Aunt Frances. It is so strange, Eva, that I should want our aunt to have a lovely tree.
Yes.
My dear Aunt Frances is 72 years old. We may not have her with us long.
Darling, last year she was 71, which isn't precisely adolescent. And all she got for Christmas was a dozen handkerchiefs and a cold in the head.
Well, this year, things are somewhat different.
So I noticed. Last time I was in touch with this little family circle, you and Clyde hated Aunt Frances like death and taxes.
You may speak for our brother Clyde, but as for me, I've always adored the dear old soul.
Really?
Really. Shall I show you what I have for her?
Do. Look,
an antique music box, the sort of thing she loves, and in solid gold. Isn't it charming? Listen. God rest ye merry gentlemen.
Expensive item, I'd say.
I paid $500 for it, but nothing's too good for dear old Aunt Frances.
It isn't possible, is it, that Aunt Frances has come into money?
Well, that is...
She has.
Well, the truth is, an old admirer of hers, Mr. Onslow Fraser, remembered her in his will.
How distinctly did he remember her, Gerald?
Quite distinctly, Eva. She's inheriting $1 million.
Oh. And when did you hear of this?
Only yesterday. Mr. Elkhart, attorney, member of the firm of Elkhart, Elkhart and Devine in Boston, brought us the news.
Now I see it all. The tree, the presents, the party... You're competing with Clyde for Aunt Frances' affection.
I am only trying to brighten the end of her life.
You are only trying to become the chief beneficiary of her will.
Nonsense. I'm quite sure I will be a beneficiary, as you will, Eva, though I doubt that Clyde will benefit very much, if at all.
Why not?
I'll tell you why not. It's amusing, really. Quite amusing. Day before yesterday, before Mr. Elkhart appeared, of course, Clyde was unfortunate enough to have written me a certain letter.
Letter?
A letter, my dear, suggesting that we put Aunt Frances in an old woman's home.
No.
Yes. I have the fatal bit of correspondence, keeping it carefully. And when Aunt Frances lays eyes on it, I shouldn't be surprised if she cuts Clyde out altogether.
And you're going to let her lay eyes on it, of course.
What do you think?
Does Clyde know you do?
Oh, my, yes. He's been on the phone for the past 2 days, begging and threatening my life by turn.
Clyde is not a man to let himself be pushed too far, Gerald.
I'll risk his wrath. I must go upstairs and wrap the music box for Aunt Frances. If the guests arrive, you'll greet them for me, won't you?
Who's coming?
Principally the family. Clyde and our dear aunt. And possibly the lawyer, Mr. Elkhart.
Anyone else?
Just that young couple Aunt Frances is so fond of.
Mr. Cranston and Margot Lane.
Yes, she likes them. And it's my desire to please her, you know.
You bet I know.
I'll be down in a moment. Let me see. This white piece of paper, I think, will be fitting. And the bright red ribbon for the holiday touch. Who's that? Oh, come in. I'll be finished with this wrapping in a moment. There, now, I think this makes a very charming little gift, don't you? I said, don't you? I said... Aunt Frances said 7. It's
9:15. Oh. The perfect night for a holiday party.
Perfect. Whirling snowflakes by special arrangement with the weatherman.
Just for Aunt Frances' sake.
Of course. What do you say we lend the scene the crowning touch of a Christmas carol before we make an entrance?
Oh, I'd be glad to try.
Very good, m'lady. We shall fill the night with music. Of a sort. Me.
Me.
God rest ye merry, gentlemen. Let nothing you dismay.
What
was
that?
Sounds as if something has someone very much dismayed.
Lamont!
Ring the bell.
Doctor!
Miss Lane, Mr. Cranston.
What's the matter? You look as if you've seen a ghost.
Not a ghost, sir. A corpse. Mr. Gerald has been murdered.
When did this happen?
Not 5 minutes ago, sir. Mr. Gerald came up here to his study to wrap this music box. And the next thing we knew, the shot was fired.
Anyone else in the house beside you and Miss Eva?
No.
Yes.
What?
Mr. Clyde was here, miss. He rang the bell just after Mr. Gerald went upstairs.
Where did he go?
He pushed me aside and followed Mr. Gerald to his study.
Look at this in the ashtray.
A cigar.
Still warm, too.
One of Mr. Clyde's brand.
Clyde murdered Gerald. No.
He looked angry, but when I tried to stop him, he said he had to see Mr. Gerald on a matter of great urgency.
What sort of matter?
Something about a letter.
A letter?
Yes, there was a letter. Gerald told me about it just before he came upstairs. It must have been somewhere in the study, probably the desk. He said he was keeping it to hold over Clyde's head. Yes, here it is.
I'm afraid I'm a little baffled.
Oh, it's only too simple. In this letter, Clyde suggested putting Aunt Frances in an old woman's home.
What? But Aunt Frances just inherited a fortune.
This letter was written day before yesterday. It wasn't until the next day that Mr. Elkhart appeared with the news about Onslow Fraser's will.
But it's perfectly obvious what happened, isn't it? Mr. Clyde killed Mr. Gerald to get the letter back.
But if he did, why didn't he take the letter with him?
It's probably because you two came running too quickly.
Yes. And not having gotten the letter, don't you think Clyde may still be somewhere in this house, waiting his chance?
If he is, I suggest Baxter be very careful.
Why, sir?
Because you know too much, and he knows you do.
You think
he just killed one man, hasn't he?
Listen, someone moving about downstairs. Clyde, what are you going to do, Lamont?
Don't worry, darling. Who's down there? Who is it? Answer me or I'll shoot.
You wouldn't shoot a defenseless old woman, would you? And so near Christmas, too.
Aunt Frances.
Thank heavens.
Lamont, let's go down before she comes up and sees Gerald.
You go ahead, darling. I'll join you in a moment.
Hello, Aunt Frances. Margot and Eva. Dear little Eva. When did you get back, child?
Just today, Aunt Frances. Surprised to see me?
Surprised and happy. But then all the surprises I've gotten lately have been happy ones. Which reminds me, Miss Lane, Miss Covington, this is Miss Elkhart. Of Elkhart, Elkhart and Devine.
How do you do?
Charmed, Miss Lane.
You're the lawyer who brought the news about Onslow Fraser's will, aren't you?
One and the same, Miss Covington. And happy I was to bear such tidings, just at this joyful season.
I should say. Speaking of this joyful season, isn't there something in the drawing room that Aunt Frances should see, Eva?
There certainly is.
What? Now, you're not to ask questions. Just stand where you are.
Nice and easy.
Now then, Margot, open the door.
Merry Christmas,
Aunt Frances.
For me?
All for you.
A lovely tree. Indeed, a very lovely tree.
It's so beautiful. It's really so beautiful.
Now then, my dear.
It's been so long since I had a real Christmas. I've forgotten how wonderful it can be.
Yes, one does forget how wonderful things can be.
You rang for me, Miss Eva?
Yes, Baxter. Merry Christmas, Baxter.
The same to you, Aunt Frances. Let's have the eggnogs now, Miss Eva.
I can't think of a better time.
Shouldn't we wait for Gerald?
Well, I don't think so, Aunt Frances.
And Clyde, where's Clyde?
Right here, Aunt Frances.
Oh, Clyde.
You don't think I'd miss your party, do you? Merry Christmas, Aunt Frances. And may you wear these for many, many happy years to come.
For me, Clyde?
For you.
Oh, pearls. A choker of perfectly matched pearls. Miss Elkhart, look.
Exquisite. Really exquisite.
You must have spent a fortune on these, Clyde. And I haven't a thing for you.
That doesn't matter, Aunt Frances.
Oh, but it does. I'm rich now, you know, and I insist that you tell me exactly what you like for Christmas.
I'd like you to be well and happy.
Oh, that's very sweet. But isn't there something you'd really like to have?
I think I can tell you what Clyde would really like to have, Aunt Frances.
What's that, Eva?
A letter.
Miss Eva, just what are you talking about, Eva?
A letter, Clyde. A letter that you wrote Gerald day before yesterday.
I never wrote Gerald a letter.
Oh, no? How peculiar. And I have it right here, signed by you.
May I see that?
No, you may not.
May I see that, Eva?
You may not,
Clyde. May I see it now, Eva?
Oh, Mr. Covington.
He's got a gun.
Clyde.
Hand it over. Come on. Give it to me. Thank you.
Clyde, what's the meaning of this?
There's no time to explain just now, Aunt Frances. I must go. However, I beg you not to believe any of the poisonous lies these people may tell you about me behind my back. I want you to know that I do wish you the very merriest...
Stop! Drop that pearl!
Come on!
Go on, me!
Drop it! Drop it!
Pick up that gun, Baxter.
Yes, sir.
What do I do now,
sir? Take Mr. Clyde up to the study and hold him there until the police arrive.
Yes,
Yes, that's right. There's been a murder, and we're holding the culprit under guard. Yes, I suggest you get here as fast as you can.
Are the police coming, Mr. Cranston?
Immediately, Mr. Elkhart. I'm sorry I had to spoil your Christmas party like this, Aunt Frances.
Oh, Lamont, my dear, you had no choice.
Aunt Frances.
Yes, my dear?
We found this upstairs. A little remembrance that Gerald bought for you.
A music box.
And a very lovely one. Listen.
Oh, how charming. And look, it's gold.
A proper gift for a golden-haired lady.
What did you say, Mr. Elkhart?
Why, Mr. Johnson! Mr. Johnson!
Come on!
That came from the back of the house.
Hi.
He's killed Baxter. Come on, Margot. Baxter! Baxter!
Baxter!
I'm all right, Miss Lane.
Oh.
Though I can't say as much for my prisoner.
Why?
He tried to escape, sir. So I was forced to shoot.
Try to escape? How could he try to escape with you standing over him with a gun?
I don't know, sir. But he did. And since the two of us were all alone here, I'm afraid, Mr. Cranston, you will just have to take my word for it.
The shot from the rear of the Covington mansion, they found Baxter standing over Clyde Covington, a smoking revolver in his hand. A few moments later, in the massive entrance foyer.
He killed Clyde deliberately, Lamont. I'm sure Baxter shot him in cold blood.
I rather agree with you, Margaret.
But why?
Possibly because Clyde had an alibi. An alibi Baxter didn't want him to use. I mean that Clyde may have not come to this house at all early in the evening.
Not even to get the letter?
He wasn't the only person who might have been interested in getting that letter, Margot.
No?
No. Baxter could have used it nicely to hold over Clyde's head as long as Aunt Frances lived, bleeding him of a nice sum in the process.
I see what you mean. Then it may have been Baxter who killed Gerald, too.
I don't know. It's only a theory. Theory is worth a visit from the shadow.
Is Baxter baby all right?
Yes, the bullet grazed his skull. He's unconscious, but he'll live. Mm-hmm. I left him in the library.
This case is getting more confusing every minute.
Yes, isn't it?
Take Mr. Elkhart, for instance. I don't understand his position in this little mystery at all.
Well, what do you mean?
You remember what he said when I gave Aunt Frances the little gold music box?
Yes, he said a proper gift for a golden-haired lady.
Exactly. And how does he know Aunt Frances had golden hair? Her hair's been snow white for the past 20 years.
It's an interesting question.
And very confusing. It's all confusion.
Margot?
Yes?
Whose overcoat is this hanging in the hall tree?
Well, I don't know. If it isn't yours, it must be Mr. Elkhart's.
Elkhart?
Why?
I just saw this sticking out of the pocket.
Clyde's letter. Oh.
What's it doing in his overcoat?
Must have grabbed it in the confusion. You know, it's just possible that our dignified old friend also saw the value in holding it over Clyde's head.
Of course. After all, what do we really know about it?
Not much. We're going to find out. I want to make a long-distance call to Boston, Massachusetts.
To what number, please?
Oh, I don't know the number. It's the law firm of Elkhart, and...
Duveen.
And Duveen.
Yes, sir. I will place the call and ring you back.
And make it fast, please.
Yes, sir.
Then what do you really think?
Time has come to stop thinking, Margot. We're on the verge of the kind of discovery that cracks the case wide open.
Yes.
Look, I want you to go into the drawing room. Elkhart will be there.
Yes.
I'll tell you exactly what I want you to do. When you get in...
Francis? Lying down upstairs. She's had more excitement than she can very well stand.
Sit down, Miss Lane.
Thank you.
Miss Eva and I were just saying that this case is becoming quite perplexing.
It is indeed. This attack on Baxter is the most puzzling thing of all. Now that Clyde is dead, who could have done it?
I don't know, but there's certainly no doubt that Clyde's guilty of Gerald's murder. Baxter saw him run up to Gerald's study just before Gerald was killed.
I'm afraid that's not true, Mr. Elkhart. Baxter admitted he was lying about that just before he was wounded.
Is that so? But there's that cigar, the one that Miss Eva saw in the ashtray. Didn't that belong to Clyde?
Yes, Mr. Elkhart, it did. It even had his initials on the band. Do you really think Clyde would have been foolish enough to leave a piece of evidence like that behind, Mr. Elkhart?
Well, what are you suggesting, Miss Lane?
I'm suggesting that with Clyde out of the way, the margin of guilt is narrowed down pretty closely, Mr. Elkhart.
To me, Miss Lane?
Yes.
But
to you.
I've been with Aunt Frances all afternoon. I was with her at the moment when Mr. Gerald was murdered.
Can you prove that?
Of course I can. Aunt Frances is right upstairs. You have my permission to ask her.
Then it wasn't you?
Obviously not. And obviously, Miss Lane... You can now draw the logical conclusion.
Yes. I'm afraid we can. Before you do, put up your hand.
Eva! Put that gun away.
I'm sorry, Mr. Elkhart. I'm really quite sorry that you two, who aren't members of this greedy little family, had to stumble on the truth.
Do you think you'll get away with this?
I can try.
There's a very slim chance that you'll succeed.
For $1 million, I'll take a very slim chance.
The telephone.
Sit right where you are. I'll answer it. Hello?
Someone there just put in a call to the law firm in Boston, Massachusetts.
Yes?
We checked very carefully, miss. There's no such firm listed.
What?
There is no firm of Elkhart, and Duveen.
What's the matter?
Who are you, Elkhart?
I'm almost sorry for you, Miss Eva.
There is no firm of Elkhart, and Duveen.
I know. And there's no $1 million.
What? But you came here about Onslow Fraser's will.
And Onslow Fraser never made a will. In fact, Onslow Fraser isn't even dead.
What?
Although just at this moment, he almost wishes he were.
Then you...
Yes, I'm Fraser.
Oh, I think I begin to see.
I fell in love with Anne Frances years ago, when she was as young as you are tonight, Miss Lane. And I never fell out of love with her.
Why did you have to pretend to us that she was inheriting $1 million? Why?
Because I knew how dismally you and Clyde and Gerald had treated her. I had no money to help her with myself. And then the idea came to me, I could make it appear that she'd become an heiress. And then depend on your greed and deceit to provide her with at least one really Merry Christmas.
A very sweet idea, but...
But a very dismal failure, I'm afraid.
I'm afraid so, too. I'm afraid there'll still have to be two more murders before the party's over.
Eva!
There may not be $1 million, but I still have my life to think of.
Don't you realize the police are on their way?
But they're not here yet, and I have a gun, and the door is open.
What was that?
Who closed that door?
I did, Eva. The door is no longer open.
Who are you?
I am the Shadow.
What are you doing here?
I've come to accuse Eva Covington of the murder of her brother, Gerald.
It's a lie. A lie. You can't prove it.
I can prove you contrived a neat little plot to murder Gerald and convince the world that Clyde had murdered him for an incriminating letter.
No.
You took Baxter in on your plan, promising him a part of $1 million you hoped to get. That's why Baxter killed Clyde when he realized he could easily alibi his way out of the charge.
How do you know all this?
The Shadow knows. When I confronted Baxter, who was about to get the truth out of him, it was you who shot him to save your own skin.
And I still have a skin to save.
Either you open that door or I pull this trigger.
Don't be a fool.
I warned you. Let him.
Stop that gun. Stop it. Stop it.
Let me go. Let me go.
As you please, Miss Eva.
She's going out of the window.
Yes, Mr. Elkhart. Straight into the arms of the police.
Found the letter in your overcoat, and I thought you were the murderer, Mr. Elkhart.
I picked it up and hidden it so that Aunt Frances wouldn't see it, Miss Lane.
Oh, here she comes.
Frances.
Yes?
I want you to know how sorry I am.
Sorry? Why?
I've made a tragic mistake. The gift of Christmas that I tried to give you turned out to be a gift of murder.
Not really, Ansel.
But Clive and Gerald are dead.
It was their own greed and ruthlessness that brought about their death.
And besides, the world's better off without either of them.
Much better.
Nevertheless, I'm sorry.
You shouldn't be. You've made me very rich.
But the $1 million wasn't real, Frances.
Oh, it isn't the million that's made me rich. It's your kindness and remembrance and the love of your heart. That's real, isn't it?
Yes.
Then, Angelo.
My dear.
Must you take that back?
Frances. You mean...
I'm alone, and so are you.
My darling.
Well, what do you know? It looks like it'll be a Merry Christmas after all.
With many more to come.
And with that, we will bring a close to the Shadow Christmas special here on Mid-Valley Mutations. That was a broadcast from December 21st, 1947, The Gift of Murder, a classic holiday shadow broadcast. Yes, that does it for us this week. A couple of things on the way out, and I don't want to keep it too long. We're still planning our collaboration with the author Jeremy Haidt. That's going to happen sometime in 2017, so stay tuned for that. And also, Lee Stevens, a recording engineer and producer, has been in the business for a long time. He sent me a whole bunch of cool things that are going to make it onto the show at some point, and we're still kind of planning that collaboration out. Bob Bucko Jr. is touring the country next year, and he's going to make a stop into our program when he gets here. I'm pretty excited about that. Always fun to see Bob play live. He's an excellent guitar player. And then we've done a lot of work with Devil's Club, and we're going to continue to do a lot of work with Devil's Club. Herodas has become a good friend of the show, and so we're going to have him on the very first program of 2017. It's going to be another one of our new music features where not only is he going to be selecting some artists that he thinks are underrepresented in the radio sphere, but I think we're going to get a live performance out of him. Plus call-ins and all sorts of fun stuff. That show should be pretty great, and it's 2 hours. So we're going to ring in the new year the way all radio DJs should, with a lot of fun, cool, new music to start things off right. Check us out online, midvalleymutations.com. All of your mutation needs are there. And what can I say? You guys are wonderful. You guys are beautiful. And without you, there would be no show. Be seeing you. Who knows what stories lurk in the hearts of KMUZ?
Mid-Valley mutations.
Nose.